Hey everyone, Jay here.
And Joey.
We're having a lot of fun doing this, and we're grateful to everyone who's tuned in so far. As the podcast grows, we hope to keep everything as independent as possible.
Which is why we've created a Buy Me a Coffee campaign.
Buy Me a Coffee is a great way to support us for as little as $1 or $4 per month, or $40 per year. We're still coming up with bonuses and perks, but we hope you'll consider supporting us while we iron out those things.
Interested in being the oil to this machine? You can find us at buymeacoffee.com/Jay and Joey or find the link in the show notes.
Thanks everyone and enjoy the show.
Thank you all.
Turtles stuff, so like pizza, Michelangelo's talking about God knows what, but I'm guessing that's what I went with.
Oh yeah, take a pizza, my heart.
Oh shit, perfect.
Yeah, that's what Michelangelo was throwing around.
You're quicker on your feet than me. I couldn't come up with that. I would be bad if I was writing for like greeting card companies, because it'd be stuff like hope you're doing well, have a good day, and that would be it. That's as sentimental as I get.
Yeah. Hello. I hope this Valentine's Day card finds you doing well.
Like, that's it. Like, that's the full extent. My wife will tell you, I'm not a romantic guy at all.
Awesome.
Hey, honey, hope you're doing good. Yeah. What do you want for dinner? I'll make it.
Let's celebrate this day with a nice firm handshake.
That's how we met, dude. The first time I met her, we shook hands. We walked up, shook hands. It was a blind date. Hello, my name is Jay. Shook my hand.
It would have been great if you did, like, the old Roman handshake, where you like grasp the forearm.
Ooh. And or like the too slow, pull my hand out of the way at the last second.
Yeah. Sucker.
I'm sure that would have. I probably wouldn't be married yet.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the fifth episode of Jay and Joey on the Record. I'm Joey.
I'm Jay.
Today is for the lovers. Jay, what are we doing today?
We are taking a stroll down a romantic path this afternoon, and we're going to be talking about albums that have things to do with love.
We're playing it very fast and loose with this concept today. You know, with the day right around the corner, why not? But before we get too deep into this, something I wanted to spring on you. So I have some crazy sabotage trivia for you.
Okay, let's go. What do we got?
So my buddy Chris Palizzi shared this with me. Chris, thanks for listening and thanks for this info. Jay, did you know members of Sabotage went on to form the Trans-Siberian Orchestra?
It makes sense, but no, I had no idea. That is awesome.
Yeah, it blew my mind. But then when I started listening Christmas. To a little bit of both, I was like, yeah, every Christmas Sabotage is...
You're listening to Sabotage.
Yeah, Sabotage coming down your chimney.
That's awesome. I'd like to see the Mountain King come down my chimney. He's Santa-esque. He's ripped, but he's kind of got a Santa vibe going about him.
If they had chosen the Mountain King instead of Santa, we might have some more good boys and girls on our
Yeah, hands. You're getting a battle axe for Christmas if you're nice.
All right. First up on the docket is...
Yes. First album we're going to talk about today is Bob Welch's debut solo album. It's called French Kiss. It was released September 16th, 1977 on Capitol Records. Joey, you told me that you weren't super familiar with Bob Welch prior to this. Did you know this album, most of these songs, with the exception of Sentimental Lady, were written for his former band Paris? Did you ever hear of Paris?
No.
Well, good. So you don't know any of this. So tell me this. What did you think of Bob Welch on first pass?
I mean, I really didn't know fuck all about Bob Welch. I guess he was an early era Fleetwood Mac based on like the tiny bits of research. And based on basically every album cover, I assume he is well known for his licks and guitar playing.
So I don't know about that because okay. I don't know as much. I honestly don't know a ton about Bob Welch either. I do know he was in Fleetwood Mac, kind of in a transitional time, I think, like between their early stuff and then when they got huge. So I don't really know much else about him. I was familiar with a couple songs from this album, though, prior to listening to it.
Okay, so like my first overarching thoughts, what month did you say this came out?
September.
Okay, so let me do this math real quick. October, November, December, January, February, March, April, May, June. What I'm thinking is there were a lot of June newborns after this baby maker came out. This has some smooth jams. This has got some...
You are damn right. Absolutely. This thing is baby making music from the beginning. And it's not like you're super romantic, but it's got a groove to it. Like you're bouncing around grooving to this when it comes on.
What were you feeling after diving in?
I loved it, to be honest with you. I love this album. Got a real kick out of it. It's full of, you know, groovy bass lines, some kind of, I would say, maybe disco adjacent bass lines, but then combined with kind of slick guitar playing. They had the traditional late 70s violin stuff in there on a few songs. And you know what I'm talking about if you know that
yep.
era of music. But there were also some harder driving bass lines, some overdriven guitars and stuff. Like I got a kick out of it. And I like his voice too, to be honest with you. There's some self-harmony stuff he does in here. I liked it. You know, starting off the first song, Sentimental Lady. That was actually written by Bob Welch for Fleetwood Mac. And they re-recorded it for this album with Mick Fleetwood on the drums and Christine McVie and Lindsey Buckingham as backup singers. So they actually were part of this album.
So it's pretty much, yeah, Fleetwood Mac song that
correct.
They just kind of unloaded. Okay. That song, so about 25 seconds into that, I could immediately hear some of the influences and some stuff that I've heard today. Like, have you ever heard of Whitney, a band called
Whitney? Oh, yeah, I love Whitney.
To me, some of the tones and vocals were Whitney-esque. Mm-hmm. This song is really frosty, like a glamour shots picture time. I mean, this is picnics and snuggle music.
Yeah. I like that one a lot. I don't know about you, but I get a big kick out of that one.
Yeah.
And it's all, I mean, there's a good chunk of this that's pretty sappy in the lyrics, but I love his voice. He's got a great voice. So any standout tracks to you on side one here or side two? Doesn't really matter.
I think the strings and the symphonic sound was really nice, really impressive. I mean, like there's that slamming disco funk rock on Hot Love, Cold World.
Yes.
Like, I really enjoyed the strings that were peppered throughout the album. I just feel like they really elevate what could otherwise have been a really mediocre album. It just kind of added a touch of class and just kind of a touch of brilliance at times. I feel like I have more notes on the B-side. For me, it's one of those albums where the B-sides is stronger than the A.
Yeah, I mean, so I like both sides of this thing, but you're right. I probably have more notes on the B side too, but you're right. So like the strings, and I even have in my notes, there are some Electric Light Orchestra sounding things going on in this, which makes sense. I mean, that's kind of the same thing that's going on at the same time, but it just kind of classes it up a little bit. You mean, you got cheesy lyrics, you got your, you know, your groove bass, but then you've got the strings in there. One thing I did like, the last song on side A is Outskirts. That one was a little more hard rock and almost had a ZZ Top-ish bass line to that one. But, you know, getting into the second side, Ebony Eyes is the first song on side B. I remember hearing that as a kid. Like, my parents listened to that one.
Okay.
Another kind of ELO-sounding track.
Yeah, that one really, it sucked me in. It's a little gritty. It's kind of dark and smoky. It's got those strings. It has a really nice hook.
And a hook, exactly. You got this sing-along chorus. By the end of it, you know what the chorus is, and you're probably singing along.
I also really liked Caroline on the back half. I kind of chuckled about how much I enjoyed it. There's strings, and then there's that nasty funk again, and just that, there's so much, like, it's so campy at times, but I'm also so okay with it because it seems very self-aware.
Right. I mean, it's got cheesy lyrics. I have that in my notes more than once. They're kind of some cheesy lyrics, but by the same time, yeah, Caroline, kind of cracked me up. The song before that's a 45 second long little weird little song. Then goes into Caroline. Again, the strings were terrific on that one. Dancing Eyes comes up next. That one was a little harder to me too. A little bit more overdrive on the guitars. Yeah. I like that a lot. I got a kick out of this whole album, honestly. I'm a sucker for this kind of stuff. Like I get those funky little bass lines are always going to hook me. You got the strings, you got the vocals. I can look past super sappy lyrics if I'm enjoying the groove.
For sure. Yeah. And I should hate everything about this on principle, but I really don't mind it. And I even found myself enjoying quite a lot of it. Like it's just fun music. Yeah, so this is one that you got from your family, I'm assuming, or one that you're just familiar with because of that?
It's another one from the record auction. Definitely familiar with Ebony Eyes and Sentimental Lady prior to purchasing it as another $2 special at the record auction.
Nice.
Definitely worth $2, I think. I got a kick out of it. Maybe I was in the perfect mood for listening to it this time around, but I liked it a lot.
What year did your parents get married?
I have no idea. I probably should know. I know the date, but I don't know the year.
I was going to say, I wonder if Bob Welch was playing at their wedding reception. I
think that's certainly possible.
Yeah, that makes me very curious. I might ask my parents that question tonight.
You guys Bob Welch heads or what? What's the deal?
They got married, let's see, early 1980. It's possible. By the way, when I saw Bob Welch, I don't know why I thought it was a country singer, like an old country singer. I don't know who
he does have a country singer name. Yeah. I don't know. I didn't get country singer from that album cover. It's got him. I don't even know what he's doing. Is he lighting a hot dog on fire? It looks like maybe like a stogie or something in his mouth. He's got sailor pants on. And then a girl licking the side of his face, which...
Not going to be doing that in 2021 on any album covers, that's for sure.
Yeah, probably not.
Until we get those vaccines.
All right, any final thoughts on Bob Welch?
No, good work, Bob. RIP.
Yeah, no kidding. The second album we listened to for Valentine's Day, Lover's Week, is Sweet Desolation Boulevard. This is Sweet's third studio album. It came out November 1974 on RCA. I actually have the Capitol version, which is the North American United States version. That one came out in July of 75. It's actually completely different from the original RCA release in a lot of ways. And don't ask me because it's so different. I did not bother to memorize all the differences, but it's very, very different.
I don't know who their manager was or who was cutting the... how they were figuring out their labels and what was going to be on what and their distribution. But it's unbelievable how messy their distribution plan was. Like this album, the US version, half of the album is stuff that came out in the UK like a year or two prior on another album, remixed and remastered. And I'm like, how did anyone think this is a good idea for promoting this band?
Right. Like even, I'm just looking. Like side one, there's one common song between the RCA release and the Capitol release that we listened to. One song in common. But let's talk about the Capitol release because that's the one I have. That's the one I listened to. So The Sweet. What do you know about Sweet?
So I was for sure familiar with them. I mean, this is kind of their first album where they were coming out of their, I don't know if bubblegum pop phase is the right word for it, but they had definitely been making music that was slightly geared towards a younger kind of Tiger Beat style generation, and they went harder with this and really changed their sound. And I love me some Sweet. Like, give me that glam. Yeah, a lot of fun for me to listen to.
Fun is how I would describe it as well. I mean, the first song, most people or a lot of people are going to know. You've heard it in movies. You've heard it around. Ballroom Blitz is the first song on this album. And my first note is immediate fun. I mean, goofy nonsense lyrics. You got hand claps. You got the pounding drums. You got fun lyrics. You know, yeah, it's the Ballroom Blitz. Like,
yeah,
good stuff, man. It kicks off really nicely.
I think it was in Guitar Hero or one of those. But for me,
yeah, probably.
It's very like Rocky Horror vibe, which came out like a couple years after this, but I dig it so hard, and it's just something, it kind of shakes you awake to start the album.
Right, exactly. It's a great lead-off track. It's obvious why it was, you know, why it's used in a lot of settings, because it's got that fun, kind of campy, but it's still rocking. It's still a great song. It's not,
yeah.
And it knows what it is. It kind of is what I would say. Next one on the album I love as well, The 16s.
I absolutely love this song. My song of the week. For me, it's towering. It has those riffs and just those tom smashes before moving into this like Bowie-esque acoustic strum. I mean, just what an anthem.
Yes. I don't know what vocal or what effect, what pedal effect or whatever they're running his vocals through, but you've got the harmonies from everyone else in the band, but by the same time, his voice, the lead singer's voice has some sort of effect on it. And it's just hypnotizing. I love it. It's a great song, and you actually sent me a live version of this on YouTube to watch, and it was amazing. It was such a blast to watch them just tear this thing up.
It's incredible. And seeing them harmonize without any production present whatsoever. I mean, this was 75, yeah, when that live video was. Like, the lyrical metering on this is kind of forced, but it works so incredibly well. Like, they're squeezing a lot of words into a tight space and just kind of like morphing the music to make it fit. There's like this accelerating tension in the song that they take a deep breath and then it's kind of a calming chorus before they unleash just that harmonious avalanche. It's kind of like a double chorus. They say the chorus.
It is.
And then they repeat the chorus, only the second chorus is more rushed, more powerful, a lot more harmony.
The harmony is throughout the album. I love it. I like the comparison actually to the Bowie in that one that you mentioned. I mean, it is kind of, it's got that same kind of vibe. Surprisingly diverse to me. I didn't expect it to be as varied as it was in terms of, you know, what we were actually hearing. Like, so like the last song on side A is I Want to Be Committed, kind of a weird little spacey kind of song. The one before that, AC/DC's like almost a surf rock kind of song. They got that running, pounding bass line, pounding drums, and then the guitar is just a rip. The whole thing's just a ripper of guitar track or guitar album.
When No You Don't came on, I was like, why don't I own any suite? And why weren't they bigger than they were? Like, they should have been massive.
They should have. Yes, I agree.
They had
totally
all the talent, all the pieces, and I don't get it. Like, I would watch a 90-minute documentary on what happened.
Yes, it's one of those bands that you listen to, you look at their catalog, you look. So my first introduction to the suite, actually, in high school, I bought a suite greatest hits CD, and that thing was solid beginning to end. So you just ask yourself, why don't people know more about this band? Because they crush it. You know, side two starts out with Sweet FA. That one is almost like a freaking Iron Maiden galloping guitar riff at the beginning. Yes, it is.
It's like a stampede.
But yeah, you still got the shining, big shining vocals, space gun sound effects, the harm. Like, it's still sweet. It's totally different from a lot of the other songs on the album.
Yeah, great harmonies, bombastic drum fills, soaring solos, dirty bass lines. Like, I think they clearly influenced Queen, and Queen pretty much just took that sound, tweaked it, tightened it, and then made it more popular and had the right game plan and the right execution. I'm not saying Sweet should be as big as Queen, but there's no reason why not.
You look at the next song, Fox on the Run. That's another one people are probably going to know. Love the synth. Love the weird effect on the vocals, the echo effect at the beginning there. Awesome harmonies again. Chorus is terrific. You got the hand claps. It's really almost a perfect track. That is Jay's song of the week, Fox on the Run.
It's perfect power pop for sure. It's, you know, space age heavy rock. I really appreciate their playing with the different styles. Like, Set Me Free is a metal song.
Love and then that song.
Into the Night is too, which I think is maybe a better track. But yeah, it's, I can kind of see a record label saying, well, Christ, I don't know how to market this. This is all over the place. But,
and that's what I liked about it. That's the thing. You're right. It's not, it doesn't really like fit into one neat little, you know, avenue. But by the same token, it's all great. You know, Set Me Free. I would be just like, I'd like to put this album on and drive really fast through the desert at night. Like, it's that kind of an album to me. I just want to be all alone, just blasting this over my speakers as I fly through the desert. I have another one, so I'm looking forward to listening to that once we get to that. My last final thought, and I don't know why I thought this, but they seem like a fun group of dudes. And I don't know how I got this out of this album, but they just seem like some guys you'd want to hang out with. Have a beer.
I got that vibe from the live video. So I watched a few videos of them, and they would go on Top of the Pops, which of course was pre-recorded, or like the vocals were pretty much the track from the album, and then they would quote unquote play over them. And you could tell they hated doing that and were just so corny and cheesy and campy about it. But then that live video that I sent you, you know, there's the dude the bassist, who is just like almost playing it like a lead guitar. And just strumming away, they have their body suits on, and he's wearing his Bret Hart style glasses.
Yes.
And, you know, just comes in with that kind of like line that leads in the chorus, one of those like, Julie and Johnny, now you've made it. And just kind of falls back. Yeah. And then just kind of goes coolly right into the harmony. Yeah. I mean, they seem just guys who enjoyed being in band and making music and had a good time while doing it.
And then the only other, my second last thing, the cover of this one was designed by a design company called Hipgnosis, Hipgnosis. It's not overly cool, but I like it. It's them. It's the band, and the background's kind of looks like Hollywood Boulevard, I think it is. But Hipgnosis did some of my favorite album covers of all time. They did Pink Floyd, Animals, Wish You Were Here. They did a couple 10cc ones that I really like. So we'll get into them a little bit more later. They did some of my favorite album covers, though. This one was kind of a swing and a miss, but they've got some better ones for sure.
There's something about this album cover that seems almost ahead of its time. To me, it seems very like early 80s metal album cover,
yeah, I can
like
see that.
At least back a cover.
Moving into the next one, we're going to talk about Kiss. We're going to do Kiss's fourth album, Destroyer. It was released March 15th, 1976. On Casablanca Records. This baby clocks in at a tidy 34 minutes. What did you think of Destroyer?
Casablanca Records, more like it, am I right?
I agree. Like, okay, so Kiss is one of those larger-than-life bands. They have their cult following. I'm not super well-versed in Kiss outside of, you know, the hits that everyone knows. I expected to be blown away by this one a little bit more than I was. I expected there to be more to this than there was. It was kind of boring.
I am right there with you. So prior to listening to this, Kiss, I would consider one of my least favorite bands of all time. An easy top three choice. But I was like, you know what? Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I just wasn't feeling it at some point. But there's just something that rubs me the wrong way about them. I can't take them seriously. I feel like they're a brand and like a novelty act, not necessarily a band.
I can see that. Now, having said that, I still think Detroit Rock City is a good song. Do you know the story behind Detroit Rock City? It's a song about a real life incident where there was somebody trying to get to one of their shows in Charlotte, and they got hit by a car outside the show and killed. Yeah, and so if you notice, Detroit Rock City starts out with somebody firing up a car and driving, and then you got Gene Simmons bass line. Like, I do like that. I got a kick out of Detroit Rock City. I do like that album, but kind of a dark thing to write a song about, for sure. At your own show, somebody got killed.
It really is. So it definitely gives a new perspective, because I had a note about that intro. I found it excruciating, knowing that what you just told me. I feel kind of bad saying that now, but I mean, it takes like a minute and a half to get to that opening cornball riff.
Yeah, that's one people are probably going to know. The rest of them, Casablanca. Okay. It's just kind of blah. King of the Nighttime World, repetitive, kind of boring. God of Thunder, same thing. Although that is the one that you see pictures of Gene Simmons like spitting blood and stuff at the concerts. It's kind of his theme song.
Those both had like creepy child voices.
They did,
and, like,
yes.
Children singing and giggling. If there is a hell, it's full of a soundtrack, like children singing and giggling on a loop, like. It skeeves me out. I hate it.
Not a big fan of kids singing, are you?
No. It's cool, so man. Unsettling for me. Like, it's, yeah.
I'm with you. Rolling along here. Great Expectations.
Yeah.
If I had great expectations for this album, it certainly did not meet them. I'll just say that. Actually,
again, that's another one with the children's choir.
It is.
I mean,
they
incorporate Beethoven. Like, what is with these dudes and the children on the album? God.
Yeah. Flaming Youth. That one I did like, actually.
Yeah, it's like a weird little hippie carnival.
Yeah, you had the calliope in there. Some good pounding drums. I actually liked that one. I thought that was actually kind of somewhat similar to a couple of the Sweet songs we listened to. I don't want to drag Sweet through the mud like that, but I did enjoy that one.
Yeah, Sweet doesn't need to be catching those strays.
No. I mean, the rest of the way out, Shout It Out Loud, people know that one. That's just a party rock song.
Yeah.
You know? People know that one. My favorite song on the album, Beth. I actually really like Beth.
See, I...
Slam it. Go ahead. But I actually liked it.
It's not bad. Like, it probably is the best composed song on the entire album. I still think the only good version of this is Paul Rudd in Role Models. Have you seen that?
I absolutely have. I love that movie.
Yeah.
Underrated movie. I think that's one of those movies of that genre that doesn't get the credit it deserves.
Criminally so.
Peter Criss does the vocals on that one. He actually wrote that song. So that's the lone Peter Criss track on this album.
I wonder if that's why it's better then. I wonder.
It's certainly possible, because I liked it more than the rest.
Peter Criss, the hidden genius of Kiss.
I did read when I was reading about this, it was kind of an unexpected hit. I don't know. I like that one a lot.
So just a few more things just to...
Yeah, fire away.
This album has so many obnoxious choruses. Their songs feel like a song in a box at time. It's, okay, you do A, then you do B, then you do C, then everyone sings the simple chorus together.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very, very much lyrics that feel like they were written by a high school sophomore. Like, it's kind of what it feels like to me, a lot of it.
I know. I just imagine, you know, them prepping for their fourth album, the guys kind of scratching their head like, shit, what a... Anybody got any lyrics? And then these dudes
shout
go home.
Shout it out loud.
And yeah,
okay. Okay, the most surprising thing about this album to me when I was researching it is the overwhelmingly positive reviews it receives from basically everywhere. Like, it's so wild to me. Rolling Stone called it one of the 1,000 albums you have to hear before you die. You know, things like that. Like, AllMusic, it's got a 5-star rating. Blender gives it a 5-star rating. Pitchfork gave it 9 out of 10.
Yeah!
I'm sure Metal Hammer would give it 6.5 out of 7. Like, I don't understand. I don't get it. I don't understand the appeal. I'm sorry, Kiss. Not especially to Gene Simmons. It seems like kind of a turd, but
yeah.
I don't get it. I don't get why this is so popular.
I looked it up just to think I can't be alone in this, but apparently I am. Apparently there's something that I am, like, even Pitchfork, who are just rotten assholes and hate everything, unless it's something that they can make a quick buck off of. Like,
9 even, out of 10.
Yeah, they're giving it a 9 out of 10. I mean, fuck you, Kiss.
And with that, Lover's Week continues into the next album here. A band that probably said fuck you to quite a few people in their day. We are going to be talking about the Sex Pistols' one and only album. It's entitled Never Mind the Bollocks, Here's the Sex Pistols. It was released on October 28, 1977 on Virgin Records. Joey, this one was your idea to include this week. Tell me what you think about the Sex Pistols.
It's funny that I mentioned this because I don't really like the Sex Pistols. So for me, it's very conflicting. I have just this like big old rant about it, and I want to try and keep this as short as possible. So what did you think first?
So I'm not overly familiar with the Sex Pistols. I know the hits off of this thing. I can see why it was probably influential with the half-sung, half-kind-of-shouted lyrics, not overly complicated music. I could certainly see how it would be massively influential. Having said that, it's kind of hit or miss for me.
I definitely respect their legacy and their influence. Whether that was intentional or not is another story, but like, you can't deny what happened because of them. So the most famous example is there was this Manchester show in 76, so like before this album came out, where the audience included people who would go on to form like the Buzzcocks, Joy Division, The Fall, Smiths, the founders of Factory Records were there, The Clash and Susie and the Banshees were influenced by them. Like, I get it. They were shocking and edgy, but at the same time, like, it's the mid-1970s. What isn't shocky and edgy for old white people in England at that time? For me, they seemed very manufactured. Like, they were formed through classified ads and handpicked by the owners of the clothing store sex to pretty much build a brand around, it seemed like. So there were
really
rumors.
I did not
that,
know that.
Malcolm McLaren and Vivian Westwood essentially formed the Sex Pistols into what they were. Malcolm McLaren was one of the owners. It was a clothing store called Sex, which is pretty much what influenced the entire punk rock look. And Malcolm McLaren went to New York and saw maybe television or maybe even the Ramones too, and came back and was like, we need this in the UK. And there are rumors that like Malcolm McLaren and Vivian Westwood would kind of feed lines and ideas and like push them to go further and further and be even edgier. Like, if you're being manufactured to that extent, they were shocking and they influenced a lot of people. But to me, it's not the punk that I was drawn to that was heavily political and heavily action oriented. Like Sid Vicious, just a disgusting human being who couldn't even play his instrument.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. When you were mentioning that the band was a manufactured thing, it makes sense now. I mean, he could not even play the bass at all. His bass is really only on one of these songs. Everything else was overdubbed by the guitar player.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it makes total sense. He was in the hospital with like hepatitis or something. Could play on any of these songs.
Yeah, so like with all that said, I mean, I'm glad you mentioned that because like I wouldn't necessarily call this a bad album. And I think a big reason is because he didn't play bass on it. Like there were talented musicians in there. And also they were working with a phenomenal producer on this. A dude who worked with Roxy Music before, and then eventually went on to work with NXS and Pulp on their biggest albums. Like they had talent in that studio
there. And there are some rippers too. I mean, Problems, the third song on here, liked it a lot. Holiday in the Sun, like that one.
Yeah, incredibly catchy.
But there were also some songs that, like you said, like feels like nothing for a lot of it. I mean, the ones people are going to know, you know, God Save the Queen. People know that one. I don't know. What do you tell me? What else do you think about this thing, man?
Well, so like I do think Anarchy in the UK like really was a scorching track that I think it was outstanding, like whether they believed it or not. I mean, I kind of wish that I could hear this album not knowing there are like two tracks on it, which are Bodies and New York, which I hate both of those because
yes,
like Bodies has some really disturbing stories. It's based actually on really disturbing stories about an obsessed fan. Yeah. Like New York, I just hated it. Like it's just bigoted. Like the lyrics are gross and straight up, I don't care. New York punk did it better.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you totally. Both of those two. Bodies, I just wrote yuck next because that's all I wrote. I mean, I hated it. New York also did not like it. I couldn't really understand a lot of the lyrics, and the ones I did understand, I didn't like. Is kind of my note for that one. 17, crack me up. You know, I'm a lazy sod, I'm a lazy sod, I'm a lazy sod, I'm so lazy. Those are the lyrics. And it makes sense. I mean, if that's the lyrics, you definitely are a lazy son of a bitch. You're right about the talent. I mean, there are some tracks on here that are total rippers. Submission, I actually liked quite a bit. Fun little riff. The lyrics are pretty vulgar and juvenile, but they kind of crack me up a little bit. Kind of a fun groove. Almost B-52s-ish on that one. He changes the way he sings that one a little bit.
Yeah. To me. Little fact, did you know their last show was actually in the U.S.? And I think it was...
I did.
Sounds like along the way in their American tour, they kind of started to realize how much they were being used and manipulated. To me, that's really fascinating. Like a band kind of understanding, wait a second, I'm just being used a proxy in whatever these handlers are trying to create.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I mean, I didn't dislike the album at all. I actually got a kick out of most of it, but there were parts where I was like, this sucks. This is disgusting. And did they really believe some of that stuff, or were they just doing it to try to make a splash? Like you said, I don't know. Yeah. If nothing else, the fact that they influence all those other great bands, tip of the cap. I'll give it to you.
For sure.
All right. Final album on the docket today. We're going to be talking about Heart's third studio album, Little Queen. It was released on May 14th, 1977 on Portrait Records.
How are you feeling about Heart?
Let me say one other thing about that. The fact that this is their third album, because it's kind of interesting. So Their first album was from a label called Mushroom, and they signed a contract with them to do two albums. And Mushroom actually took them to court, and it was determined they were free to sign with a new label, but Mushroom, they were owed an album. So Heart actually went to the studio, recorded an album called Magazine. There were actual guards, court-ordered guards there while they were recording that album.
Holy cow.
So that one came out, and then shortly after, Little Queen came out. The interesting thing about that is because of the first album they put out, Magazine, and this one all came out in kind of rapid succession. All three of them were in the album charts at the same time. So Heart was kind of huge at this time.
That's so bizarre about the Magazine.
Yes.
Talk about a great way to really boost someone's creative process.
Yeah, exactly. And the first song on this album is Barracuda, which a lot of people are going to know Barracuda. Oh, man, what a badass song. And that one was actually written kind of, so there was kind of a rumor started, and I didn't get super deep into it, but I think it was maybe by one of the people on the Mushroom label that the two ladies fronting Hart, Anne and Nancy Wilson, had a weird incestuous relationship, and it was overheard, or it was brought up in a radio interview with Anne, and she got super pissed off about it, went home and wrote the track Barracuda. So that's actually where that comes from.
I mean, it hits you like a truck, and it sounds like it's on a mission to just like grind someone to dust. And I can see why now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pissed off. It's heavy. It's rocking. Like, but I love Barracuda. Absolutely. What a way to kick off an album. It's hard rock. It is. Yeah. It's got the chugging guitars, and Wilson's vocals are monstrous. I love them. You've got the drums just bashing away. Like, this is a super heavy song.
Then you have this very interesting turn and change of pace with Love Alive right after that, that is so clearly influenced by Led Zeppelin. And
oh, yeah.
I mean, I kind of feel like it's as strong as anything as Led Zeppelin put out after their Untitled album. Like, the students kind of became the teacher. And then you got Sylvan Song, which kind of seems like a perfect accompaniment to that track.
Oh, yeah. I'm a sucker for mandolin. And that one's got dueling mandolins on it that go into Dream of the Archer, which, again, full of mandolins. I pictured, like, elves singing in the forest. Got some definite Led Zeppelin-ish elements in there. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Led Zeppelin, have you ever seen the video of Hart covering Stairway to Heaven at the 2012 Kennedy Center Honors?
Yeah, is that the one where Robert Plant cries?
Yes, it's so damn good. Yeah, Anne Wilson's voice, man, she's a monster. She's got such a killer voice.
She really is. And I mean, this might sound weird to say, like, since they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they're super popular, but I really think Hart is underrated. When people talk about great classic rock acts, I feel like they're just way overlooked. Like, I just don't think people get how influential they were in the grand scheme of things and what they were doing at their time period. And apparently, you know, the legal fights that they were going through to make their art, like, they really kicked down a lot of doors and paved a lot of roads and were insanely talented.
No question. Just going back to Barracuda, in my notes, I honestly wrote, this is a monstrous rock song. One of the best classic rock songs ever created. Like, it's just massive. And then the rest of the album is equally, like, it's full of great stuff. You know, Kick It Out's more of a classic rocker song. Little Queen I liked a lot. Did you have any notes on that one?
It's fun. It's funky. And it's funky, a great,
for sure.
Is that the lead to the B-side?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so great, great call in making that the lead. On Kick It Out, they move, really a lot of this album, they move between occult rock and showier, bigger sounds with really no problem. Like, going from Dream of the Archer to Kick It Out, which is a track I love that's just full of swagger and theatrics, it's so impressive.
Absolutely. And then, you know, moving into, like you said, the kickoff side B with Little Queen, super funky, weird little melancholy bridge in that one. The next one is Treat Me Well. That is the only song on the album with Nancy actually on the lead vocals. It's a slow jam. I got a kick out of that one too. I actually like that one a lot. Cry to Me, second to last song. That one's just the sisters with some really nice vocal harmonies and stuff. They have some really nice harmonies. So if you don't know Hart, it's, you know, fronted by two sisters, Anne and Nancy Wilson. Anne is the lead vocalist. Nancy plays a lot of different instruments, actually. But on a few of these songs, Little Queen in particular and Cry to Me, some great harmonizing by the sisters. They both have really good voices.
Yeah, Cry to Me is such a solid, slow rock tune. And I love how it flows into Go On Cry, the closer. It's almost like they're closing tracks rather than one closing track. It's like closing track A and closing track B. And Go On Cry, it's not so much a song as it is just kind of this brooding jam that I think those two together are great last 8 minutes to an album.
Go On Cry, almost instrumental, but then they got to repeat wailing harmoniously the phrase Go On Cry in the background. That song is almost Pink Floydian.
Yeah.
Weird time changes and stuff in that one, but still very much Hart. Like, I don't want to take any away from Hart by comparing them to somebody else because they're very much their own thing. On the whole, I love this album.
Yeah, I love Hart. Fantastic album. This is a later song, but they've even made my list of karaoke jams. I always keep a playlist for whenever I go to karaoke, and it's a later track. It's Alone, but I mean, once you make my karaoke jam list, like that's a sign of greatness.
I guess. I mean, I also know that Woolly Bully is on your karaoke playlist. That's, so
that's it. Let's not throw stones here. That's that's definitely one to pull out when you're like, I'm ready to go home and I want to make everyone else hate the fact that they pulled me out tonight. Yeah. Any closing thoughts on this?
Nothing other than the fact that I loved it. And I'm looking forward to when we get to their debut album, Dreamboat Annie, a little bit later on in our adventure here.
For sure. Yeah. Heart rules. Everyone should appreciate what they've done much more than they already do. And if they already do it even more.
All right. Okay. Final segment time for
final segment.
Lover's Week here. I didn't see that coming. In this segment, we ask each other a question that we have prepared beforehand. Neither of us knows what the other's going to say. So, Joey, hit me.
Jay, not only is February 14th Valentine's Day, it's also Rob Thomas's birthday. Here's what I'm asking from you, and I'm hoping you know enough Matchbox 20. I've got four buckets. I want you to play some Matchbox 20 song in each of those. Valentine's Day, Galentine's Day, Palentine's Day with just you and your buds, and then Singles Day. So take as much time as you need. I'm curious to know what Matchbox 20 songs are spinning on February 14th.
That's rough, dude. Let's see. My God. I don't know the discography well enough. All right, so let's go Valentine's Day. If You're Gone.
Nice. Yeah, yeah.
Shit, man. The only other ones I can come up with are, let's see, Push, Unwell, Back to Good, but I don't know where I would throw those, what buckets I would throw them into. All right. God, dude. Unwell. Let's call that one. Shit. You stumped me. You stumped me on this. I don't know. Let's put that one on Palentine's Day.
Okay.
I don't know the lyrical content. Let's see. Push. What were my other choices? Galentine's Day?
Yeah, Galentine's Day and Singles Day.
Okay. Singles Day is going to be 3 a.m. And then let's go Galentine's Day. Let's slap that one on Back to Good. I don't know why, okay. But there you go.
Yeah, I think
that's my Matchbox 20 knowledge for you.
Isn't Back to Good that kind of upbeat one?
I think so, yeah. That's why I picked it.
Yeah, actually, yeah, maybe I don't know either. But okay, right. Yeah, you handled that one well.
Thank you. I think you reached my full extent of Rob Thomas Matchbox 20 knowledge right there. That was the end of everything. Joey, you have to pick one of these bands from this week to play a nice Valentine's concert for you and your lovely wife. Which band is playing your Valentine's concert?
Oh, man, that one is... What if I say Kiss?
I love you, dear.
I just imagine her looking at me and be like, I'll see you tomorrow. It's I'm torn between Heart, just because they're so classic and so powerful in their sound, and Sweet, just because they're so fun and so dancing. Yes. You know, I'm going to go with Sweet because I think it would be a lot of fun. Two of us just, I think we could, yeah, we could have a lot of fun. But life goes on. You know, it ain't easy. Just got to be strong.
Just got to be strong.
When you want
one of the 16s.
Yeah, man.
Hell two yeah, of us brother.
Just rocking out. Maybe I would even wear one of those onesie unitard things that the band rocks.
Yes, the deep V with the full body deep V thing.
Very deep V.
Sparkly. Yes. Yeah,
like belly button deep V.
Get the belly button showing. Yes, exactly. I don't know, dude. I might pick Bob Welch because I think he's going to set the mood for what I have in mind for my Valentine's Day.
You risk your wife leaving you for Bob Welch, though.
That's true. We don't want that.
All right, friends, whether you're celebrating with anyone or solo or buying candy at CVS now that it's 50% off, we hope you all had a good time today. If you loved what you heard, please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Jay and Joey Pod. And don't forget about our Buy Me a Coffee. You can find that and our Spotify playlists through the links in the show notes. If you want to reach out to us, our email is jayandjoeypod@gmail.com. Be good to each other.
Later.